podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
At Firehouse Subs, a portion of every purchase helps provide life-saving equipment to first responders. We make our subs differently because our subs make a difference. Like our Italian sub, piled high with Genoa salami, pepperoni, and Virginia honey ham. Or our Firehouse meatball sub with zesty marinara, both with melted provolone and Italian seasoning. Your choice, just $6.99 each for a medium and only for a limited time at Firehouse Subs. Tap the banner now to start your order.
It's the bluest room in town. Yeah, they're actually funny, and the guests the sound through the ups and the downs. Yeah, they'll be there waiting for the next time round. You can find out what it means. Everton will break your heart, but they're still your team. It's far from doom and gloom. So tune in now and get involved with the Blue Room.
Blue Room is your weekly show. Nearing the end of another wild, wild week of Everton Football Club. And there might be a new manager at the end of it. Who knows? But getting to this point has been a wild, depressing and quite funny ride at times. And we're here to reflect on it. Mike D'Asher joins us to reflect on it. Mike, how are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm okay. I mean, it's been a pretty wild 48 to 72 hours, all told, hasn't it? I think I've gone from thinking Wayne Rooney was a dead cert to thinking that Vitor Pereira and his massive armband were going to be making it over. And instead now, it looks like he's torpedoed his own chances and it's going to be our Frank Lampard. It's just wowzers.
Wowzers is great. Wowzers. Les Roberts is here as well. Can you elaborate on Wowzers, Les?
It's terrible, but it's Evan. Basically, it's just another absolute mess from this. I think everyone has called it recently circus of a football club. It's just like the left hand doesn't seem to know what the right hand's doing, and neither have got a clue what the feet are doing. It's just completely all over the job. As Mike said, you know, we went through a bit thinking, yeah, probably going to be Wayne Rooney, then it's probably going to be Pereira. Then it looks like it's going to be Frank Lampard. And it's just like, they're not even really similar, are they, in profile or anything. It's just like three fellas who are available, sort of. Well, two who are available. One you could probably get.
Sometimes maybe good, sometimes maybe wowzers is my assumption there. But to be honest with you,
sometimes maybe wowzers. Isn't that
sometimes lucky? Sometimes maybe wowzers. That's how we go. But My assumption is that by the time this podcast goes live, it'll probably be out of date. It'll be Mark Hughes tomorrow, and then it'll be Sam Allardyce the day after that, and then it'll be trying to nab Dean Smith from Norwich because Mashiri's seen him win a couple of football matches. It'll keep coming. I would genuinely be shocked if this is it now.
If it's not Pereira and it is Lampard, do you reckon that's all because of the graffiti? At Goodison. Do you reckon that's the new thing now? It was like Martinez out, he got sacked. Pereira out, he wasn't even in, but Lampard in. If that happens, maybe there's some sort of oracle who sprays stuff on the side of Goodison.
Yeah. Do you know what? Like, if that's what it takes, someone needs to go and write left blonde in on the side of Goodison and it'll be grand. But no, I think to be serious about that for a second, I know I don't do it very often, but I don't think that really had very much to do with it. I think what had more to do with it is the fact that Farhad Moshiri has promised the job of Everton football manager. I think I've counted up to 8 or 9 separate individual managers since David Moyes was sacked and not given them the job. That's like, you've only got to go back to the Ancelotti one for the farcicalness of the amount of people that were actually offered the job then and didn't get given it was 3 different people. One of which we know was David Moyes. One of which we know was Vitor Pereira. And it's farcical.
I mean, this week, and I know we've been saying it for a bit, but this week, and I think yesterday in particular, when I was watching Sky Sports News and listening to that phone call, you used the word circus there, Les, and I think I think we've been close to getting to that point of West Ham when they have people running on the pitch and trying to put flags in and, you know, doing all their madness. You know, Newcastle when they went a bit insane, QPR, Aston Villa, Sunderland. Do you know those clubs that when, you know, a few years ago you'd be sat there, you know, safe with Everton's 10th place or 7th place finish in the bank from the season before in the summer, and you'd be watching them sack managers and sign mad players, and you'd be thinking, how on earth is it that possible to run a club this badly? You know, no one can get this wrong, surely. And you'd sit there and think, God, you know, at least we're not that. You know, I've hated Everton at times in my life. I've loved them a lot less, to be honest. And I've been ambivalent to them a lot of times. But it's only really the last few weeks, and certainly yesterday when I've looked at us and thought, we are an absolute joke. This is embarrassing. We are in the position of those clubs that I mentioned where when they sort of were on the way to the lowest ebb. It was just car crash television. And I just thought, yeah, that's it. We've done it. We are there now. We are in that bracket.
Yeah, we fully are. We're usually a victim of circumstance, aren't we? Like something mad happens to lose a game or a semi-final or a cup final or something. But this is completely self-inflicted. It is proper. You've got a head case owner in. And he's doing what he likes, and he doesn't really seem to know what to do for the best. People said, you know, he's a successful businessman and all that, so surely you must have some sort of nous on how to run a business. But for running a football club would be very different to running any other business. But just to run a big business in particular, it just takes a little bit of common sense, and he doesn't seem to have anything about him that says he's qualified to run a football club. I think you mentioned, Mike, if not for the ground move, we'd probably be talking about him in the same breath as the Venkies, because he's that bad. He's absolutely terrible. He's not fit to run a football club. But this, I think that the whole ground move thing is, you know, it's fair enough. It's kind of blindsided us a bit. And while that's been on the horizon, you kind of let I think everything that's gone on the football side has kind of slipped under the radar a bit. Now, he's done good things at Goodison Park. He's, you know, put a lick of paint on that. That looks better than it did. The ground move has been done correctly. Everything has gone according to plan, and that's all on target. But the football is the only thing that counts, and he really has messed that up massively. I think anyone who's been involved at that level of the club over the last 5 years since he's been there, they're all complicit in letting the football thing fall apart. And, you know, that's all that counts at the end of the day. If we're doing well on the pitch, we're not having protests outside the ground. Even if we've got super agents in the stand, and he's in the chairman's ear. If the team's doing well, people aren't really that bothered about that. But when it all falls apart like this, that's when you get this sort of build-up and head of steam, and the fans aren't happy. And yeah, that's the first thing that needs sorting ahead of everything, and it's been let go.
I mean, there's been things, Mike, that have happened that we haven't even mentioned. Fabio Cannavaro was mentioned as a possible candidate last week. Farah Machinery told Jim White on TalkSport that he's never speak to TalkSport again. what have you made of it all? It's like one of those friends you see on Twitter, isn't it, from Club X, going, this is why we are the legitimate banter club. And it's like, yeah, we could be one of them for this week, and we probably
It's just the breaking up with Jim White on TalkSport was just... It was a classic piece of pantomime, wasn't it? It was one of them things where the discussion was all about we want better, good lines of communications with the supporters. Well, first of all, don't bin off the AGM that you are doing right now. It's just the whole I am listening thing is, for want of a better phrase, I'm just bored of it. Like, because I think, Matt, you put up a segment of a conversation that Jim White that Farah Moshiri had had 4 years ago, talking about, well, I probably should talk through Jim White less. Like, it's not proper.
Like, ironically enough.
It's just, like, what do you even say to, it's not going to change. It's exactly the same as it ever was. And at least this time he actually knows it's Jim White's phone number instead of thinking it's Bill Kenwright ringing him up on a withheld number. Honestly, any more I hear about Farah Moshiri, I'm convinced that the man is a Jim Henson puppet that has been sent here to Truman Show Everton fans. Like, this can't be a real man. It can't. You can't be this bad at running a football club. Like, And I said it a couple of weeks ago. The terrifying thing for me is he's trying really hard. Like, this is him trying his best to run a football club well. That's really scary. It's not like Mike Ashley just being like, well, you know, I can do the bare minimum and get us by, but if we're in trouble, I can bring us straight back up if I need to. I know what I'm doing. No, this is a fella who's like, I want Everton to be the best in the world ever, and this is how I'm going to do it. And it's just, it's so scary that he is so adamant that his best and his method is what wins the day, that he sacked the director of football who disagreed with the awful decisions and is now undertaking a strategic review while still listening to Keir Jarabchin, who is the main problem and the cause of the strategic review needing to take place. It's just utterly terrifying, isn't it? Like, there is no good words to say. It's just been car crash after car crash after car crash. And I sat here after Benitez was sacked and I said, right, make sure there is no farcical appointment now. Learn the mistakes of the last 2, 3, 4 managers of going all around the houses, having your dirty laundry bandied about in public. And it's just been done worse. It's gone even worse than it did those occasions. Like, this is the ultimate one now. I was sat there watching that Vitor Pereira interview and I was like, yeah, put us in the bracket with the Villa that went down, the Sunderland that went down, put us in the bracket with QPR buying Christopher Samba and paying like £400,000 a week to him. Like, put us in that bracket now. This is utterly farcical. Like, we laugh at the likes of your Arsenals and your Spurs about, like, oh, well, you know, typical Arsenal, typical Spurs and all those sorts of things. Typical Everton is setting yourself on fire and just pooing yourself. Like, there is nothing that you can describe as typical Everton in a semblance of normal sporting activity now. Typical Everton isn't losing a football match. Typical Everton is getting a managerial candidate on Sky Sports trying to stop fans from having a go at him for being a crap football manager. It's terrifying.
What you've got to remember, though, is that Bill Kenwright said other football chairmen think, what would Everton do?
And then they don't do that. That's the bit he left off. That's the bit he left off. I have absolutely no qualms with that being true. The other football people do 100% sit down and go, what would Everton do? What would they do right now? Let's not do that. Let's do the exact opposite of what Everton would do. That's just the bit he left off, because people
don't make sense when you say it like that. Yeah.
Soap opera script writers potentially doing a football TV program might ask, what would Everton do? Certainly. It feels like it's gone.
Honestly, the next series of Ted Lasso, I guarantee it will at least include one or two things that have happened at Everton in the past couple of weeks. Guarantee it.
If this happened on Dream Team, you probably would have thought, nah, it's a bit too far-fetched, that.
I mean, what did you make of that yesterday, Laz? It was just... I was sort of watching it, and it took me a while to sort of... For it to sort of dawn on me how mad the whole thing was. Like, and it's one of two things, isn't it? It's, you know, we said just before you're recording there, either Keir and Farhad are behind, you know, sat next to Vitor on the couch with the Love Actually boards, trying to tell him what to say about former players and all that kind of stuff. Or maybe it's a manager who's been told he might not be right for this job because fans don't want him and he may not get it, thinking, right, I know what I'm going to do to essentially win this back. I'm going to go on Sky Sports. Did you know that interview I just had the other day? I'm going to do it again. Everybody could see. I mean, it was only about like 5 to 10 minutes into it. I just thought, oh my God, this is certifiably mad.
I actually missed it. I was out in town yesterday afternoon. So the first I heard of it, I was checking Twitter. And like some verified accounts were giving Vitor Pereira quotes about Everton. And my heart sank. I thought he'd actually become our manager because he was talking about Everton. I thought, oh my God, if he'd given the job. Scrolling through, couldn't find anything. Eventually got onto the fact that he's done this interview on Sky Sports. And I haven't seen it, but I've read the transcript. And it is just literally ticking every box, isn't it? The fans will love this. He's just ticking all the boxes off. Even calling Goodison a fortress, which is a little bit rum. But yeah, it was a really strange thing to do. Unprecedented. I I think. But I've seen some journos today saying, well, surely he's blown it for himself now, hasn't he? And you kind of think, well, he's been put up to this by someone like Jurabchin to go and do this, to kind of put his throw his hat back in the ring and placate Evertonians, which he clearly doesn't know anything about the club if he thinks this is going to placate Evertonians. It's just, the whole thing's just utterly bizarre for a bizarre club.
Do you know any other normal football club at this stage, if a managerial candidate absolutely swigs down the Kool-Aid and jumps off the deep end like Vitor Pereira has done, you can immediately say, right, you are discounted. You are not going to be the next manager, because I'm sorry, that is just small time and ridiculous, and you have made everyone look a laughing stock here. David Ornstein's tweeting that he's still in the running. Like, I'm sorry. Like, this football club is just, it's just ridiculous. Like, how can, what are we expecting next? Are we going to get Frank Lampard, like, sending in clips to the One Show about, like, his tactical formations? And it baffles me how he could be anywhere near the running. But as Les says there, he's been put up to it. And it's quite obvious that he's been put up to it by Jurabchin. It's obvious that that's where this has come from. Because Jurabchin obviously knows that Farhad Moshiri is a bit stupid when it comes to football. Do you know what? Greater earning money. Yeah, fair dues. He's got a lot more money than I have. But quite evidently, he's not very clever when it comes to football. And it's quite evident that that's what Jurabchin thinks and is actually true. So he's thought to himself, right, well, what we'll do is, because it got such a bad response, we'll just get you on telly and we can see and just float the idea that, you know, talk about your football and style, about how much you love Everton and how much you've heard of, like, I don't know, psychopath, and, you know, drop all the names, give it a good go. And it's obviously hit the fan, because as Les says, Keir Jurabchin does not know Evertonians and can only see the money that's in front of his face that he could earn by potentially putting Vitor Pereira in there. He's tried to get in the job every single time Everton have had a managerial vacancy since David Moyes left the football club. And now he's got more and more desperate, to the point where this is his big chance. This is the one. If you don't get it now, you're never, ever going to get it. So he's finally done the last throw of the dice, where you think, right, Farhad Moshiri is a magpie. He likes shiny things. Let's go and be very shiny on Sky Sports. And hopefully this is the one that they don't fall for. Like, hopefully it is so blatant and so awful that even he can see that this is ridiculous. But no, he's still in the running. He still possibly could be Everton's manager.
The thing is, Mike, as well, is that Farhad Moshiri, as we know, has got a history for doing business this way himself, hasn't he? You know, of course, on Sky Sports News all those years ago, he phoned up to talk about Ross Barkley. And, you know, he's done it numerous times on Talk Sports. I think it's a fair assumption to make that this move was from the same sort of playbook as that, wasn't it? You know, it follows that pattern. But I think, obviously, before we come on to speak about Lampard as well, I think what was interesting the time about that yesterday, Les, was that obviously there was a protest planned at Goodison Park for 7 o'clock. By the 27 group. I think the night before, a few wires were crossed and there's a bit of miscommunication there, which people came out and apologised for. You know, some people will write them off entirely because of that, other people want to give them a second chance, whatever group you fall in there, fair enough. But looked like the one last night, aside from one bell end spray painting on Bill Kenwright, seemed to go a lot better, a lot more.
Not over. Actually on Bill Kenwright.
Do you know what, as well? He could have at least done a moustache and glasses. I mean, it wasn't it. If you got to do it properly.
What actually was sprayed? Was it just over his face, was it?
I think it was just like just a covering of his face.
Yeah. His face on the timeline.
Yeah, just silly behaviour.
Even a cock and balls. Just be creative, come on.
We do not condone cock and balls. We spray painted on the Amazon timeline. Just a cock and balls. But yeah, it looked a lot better last night, didn't it? It seemed like the message was getting across. There's a lot of national and local media there, and it's drawn attention to the problems of the football club now.
Yeah.
In a way that it's not really been done in the past.
Yeah, and the thing for me is, I think the message is still a little bit clouded, because I'm not sure communication is the issue, because if it is, it's like, what? Well, just tell us why we're rubbish. and we'll be fine. The big problem is that we're rubbish and the club is being run really badly. And for that, the buck stops with Farhad Moshiri. Now, people seem a little bit scared to say anything against him, maybe because they think the plug will be pulled on the ground. At this point, I'm not really bothered if the plug gets pulled on the ground, because that is not a pressing issue. We've got a ground and it is fit for purpose. I assume the safety certificate's fine. There's nothing wrong with Goodison Park. It will be fine for us. The pressing issue now is staying in the Premier League. And this chairman, sorry, not the chairman, well, he's complicit in it all anyway, but that's another story. This owner has run this club so terribly in the last 5 years that it has spent £500 million and it's in a worse position than when he got it, and we could quite feasibly go down. He needs to be getting called out for me. He needs to be getting actually called out, because this is his fault. This is his doing. And we can't sort of hide behind the fact that we might get a new ground, because it's pointless doing that. So I think, for me, the message is still a little bit clouded, because, you say we want better communication. He puts an email, press release out. It's like, well, there you go. We've got better communication. Nothing's been solved. So, that's the show for me. But it does look like it's picking up momentum. And it did get a lot more. It got some national coverage on the news and that, didn't it? Which has got to be a good thing for us, because, I don't know, we're never taken seriously. It's always, well, what exactly do you want? So all we wanted was what any club wants, which is just push on from where we were. And that's not happened. And then when that doesn't happen, and and the club's been run the way Everton's getting run at the minute, the medical staff's gone, the manager's gone, the director of football's gone, the off the board's gone. I think there's about three people on the board, isn't it? It's absolutely bare minimum. It's an absolute shambles from top to bottom. So, we've got a right to voice our concerns, and the fans need to. But I do think the message definitely needs clarifying for me.
I suppose it's hard, Mike, isn't it? I totally agree with everything Les has said there, but it's hard to have a clear, concise message on this when it could just easily be, it's all shite. I'm like, if it feels like so many things wrong that people are fuming about, how do you direct and channel all that into one, succinct thing with a protest?
Oh, that's fully the problem with Everton, is that if you wanted to put together a really brief, succinct statement on all of the problems at Everton, it'd probably be 3 or 4 pages long. You'd be right until the cows come home. But I do agree with Les to some point that the issue is not communication, but I can see why it's written down that way. The issue is that these ridiculous decisions are not being held to account anywhere. And I think the logic behind it, and I understand it, and I'll probably go with it to some extent, is that, hang on, can you just talk us through these absolutely shocking decisions you've made? It's like when you do something dead stupid when you're a kid and your mum just sits you down and goes, what are you thinking? Like, do you want to just take me through? And you sit there all embarrassed and you can't even speak. You don't say words. You just look at the floor and you don't do it again, because you don't want to be sat in that position ever again. It's about being held to account. Granted, yes, you placate the fans really easily by going, yeah, just talk to us. No, talk to us about the shocking decisions you have made, how you came to the process of making these decisions, and what you can do to fix them. No, we'll never get that, because the questions are too difficult. But I do understand the idea of communication behind it. I loved the protest in at Goodison Park last night. Brilliant. It just shows the Evertonians don't need martyrs, they just need notice. Everyone's ready to go. Everyone's ready to kick off and throw up a bit of a storm. Like, it's about getting people together and organised, and as many people as want to get their views across and want to actually have a say all should be involved in it. It was great to see that with not even a full day's notice, just getting a little statement with a piece of paper out there, got more than enough people with the coat on and they got moving. It was great.
For me as well, this feels like a better way to do it than actually at the game. Like, protests at the game, sit-ins after the game. You can take this away from the game with the show last night. People randomly turning up at Goodison Park on a Wednesday night. That's as powerful a message as people just sat in after the game. And let's face it, no one can really be arsed being sat in after the game. It's all you can do just to get out of there as quick as possible. So I think this is probably a better way of doing it. Just turning up at Goodison Park, randomly, lots of people. There for no other reason than to protest against what's going on. So it worked really well.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that completely.
I think the one after the Millgate did work well, to be fair, just by virtue of the fact that people were in there and they had banners and stuff, which you could actually see because, you know, the stadium is a bit more empty. Yeah. I think there was about a couple of hundred more there. And then obviously it's in front of the assembled media, it's in front of the people who obviously a lot of these protests are sort of aimed at as well. But I think, I can't remember if it was you, Mike, who said last night, I think the good thing about the one last night was that it was big enough in size and scale and organisation that it feels like more people will look at that and go, oh, there's a lot of people there. You know, maybe someone who was thinking, maybe I'm not going to go down because I might feel a bit silly going down. There's only, you know, a few people there and you feel like a bit of a dickhead. Now there's going to be a lot more people. And I think that in itself will encourage more people to get involved.
Absolutely. It's a snowball effect, isn't it? And I think that when you have that sort of starting from the very bottom campaigning, like the very, very bottom, you have to walk before you can run, really, can't you? So maybe with hindsight, the whole walking out of your seat to 27 minutes, you are right. I completely agree. If you're sat there and you want to do it, but you're like, I really don't want to be the only person to stand up because I might get loads of abuse like launched at me. Fair enough. Whereas if you get like, right, we're all going to meet here, everyone on just a random Tuesday night, come on. And it sort of gives you that bit more security because what's the worst that happens in your mind there? You turn up and there's no one there and you go, oh, right, fair enough, I'll just go home then. You're not going to get pelters for moving out of a seat. But yeah, so I think it was a great way to go about it, and I want to see a lot more of it, to be honest with you. I want to see it everywhere.
I think a problem with the in-ground ones as well is you can get a feel of how many people have joined in, and then that can open up to people saying, well, look, no one's bothered. So when there's like a couple of hundred people in the lower gardens, that is a lot of people. But in the scheme of a 40,000-seater stadium, it doesn't look
very much.
When you're all gathered outside, you can't really get that scale still. So it's, I think visually outside the ground is probably better. But yeah, I can see there's a place for both. But as you said, Mike, it's having the buy-in in the ground, isn't it? Walking out on 27 minutes. Loads of people would have been feeling that. I want to go, but well, I don't know. I can't be arsed getting shouted down or something. So
It's new for us as a fan base to do this sort of stuff, isn't it? Certainly recently. You know, and people I imagine who are organising this aren't, you know, used to doing this sort of thing on this kind of scale and getting everyone involved. So listen, it's gonna take a while for everyone to sort of find the best way of doing it and find the best way of getting the message across. But it seems like positive steps are being taken.
Yeah.
It's mad that we've done almost half an hour on this and we're potentially on the brink of appointing a new manager. We haven't even spoken about that. That's how mad this week has been at Everton. And as well, one of our best young players has signed a new contract. Our best midfielder is injured. We're not going to speak about that. That's nothing in the grand scheme of things. But as you mentioned, like David Ornstein tweeting there, but based on what he's saying there, it feels like Lampard and Pereira are still very much neck and neck, which is a bit mad. I think Phil Kirkbride has done a piece from the Echo as well, saying he's like probably edging towards Lampard. It would indicate from the work, not that. But it does feel a bit like more like it's going to be Frank Lampard. Is the situation, Mike, now exacerbated by the fact that Everton have got 4 days to the transfer window closes as well, and they haven't got really any midfielders that can run? No, after that, the core is injured. And you look at Lampard, and I know you've got reservations about him, but is it just important to get someone in who knows what players he wants and knows the way in which he wants to play? Because if Everton dally any longer on this, then we could be looking at Andre Gomes and Alan, and maybe that's it for the next couple of months.
Yeah, it was just as important, 11, 12 days ago when Benitez was sacked, said at the time, you need to get your ducks in a row. You need to be prepared and know what you were doing, which was even more bonkers that he decided to get rid of the director of football who might have had some plans and some ideas, and sticking all your eggs in the crazy Rafa Benitez basket. I don't know. I don't see very many positives with a Frank Lampard appointment, I must be honest. I think one of the few that is that, you know, that as he's shown from his time at Derby, is that he will always be there for a Chelsea handout. He's always going to be able to bring in someone from Chelsea, probably on loan. And whether that's, I don't know, I think it'll probably be Ross Barkley, if I'm honest with you. I think that's probably the way it'll go. But if it's someone like that, Ethan Ampadu, you need to get someone. And it's even more calamitous that Everton have already wasted one of their domestic loans on a winger that they don't need at all.
Just a chance that can just get cancelled.
Someone's got to ask that question. I really do hope someone asks that question because it needs to be answered.
Big Anthony Gardner vibes about him, hasn't he?
Oh yeah, it's like it's the well, it's the opposite of the David Unsworth thing, you know. You just
yeah, as well, yeah.
Like we've waited to come full circle, and there you go. We've got the opposite David Unsworth. Hopefully, because they really need those two domestic loan slots. They need both of them, and they probably need both of them on midfielders. Let's be honest. If you can get rid of a winger and a winger's wages out of the squad, if you can terminate that loan and just bin it off, then you really, really do need to do that. But yeah, that's obviously another argument for another day. It's more about Lampard now, isn't it? And just, yeah, the scary thing for me is that we can sit here and we can talk about, like, yeah, maybe you'll be able to do this, maybe you'll be able to do that. Who knows? Maybe Mascherano will change his mind in 3 hours. Maybe Gerabchen will show him something else, something shinier. Maybe he's got a reflective Mark Hughes jacket or something that he can just waft in front of him.
Mark Hughes is one of his clients, not clients necessarily, but he's worth of him in the past, hasn't he?
He has close relationships and close ties to Mark Hughes, which is why I'm very, very surprised we haven't heard Mark Hughes' name mentioned at all as of yet. But yeah, I don't even know how my gut feels about who it's going to be anymore. You can't really have gut feelings with Mascherano because they change every 10 minutes. Probably the same as his. Like, your gut feeling's tied to his because it's constantly changing and changing. But yeah, Lampard, if he does come in, he's going to have his ducks all in a row. Whether it's the likes of Dele Alli, whether it's an actual holding midfielder, which is what they need, he's going to have to work, and he's going to have to work quickly. If we're talking about possibly making a decision tomorrow, if you go off what Phil Kirkbride's been writing tonight, then that probably means that you'll get a day, maybe 70, maybe 48 hours if he's really lucky. But Jesus, it's going to be a bit of a squeeze.
Yeah, and that in turn largely just to being held sort of, you know, hostage by these clubs, doesn't it? Who we're looking to potentially buy players from or get loan players from. So we're in that situation again where we're in January, and for one reason or another, we're probably going to be paying over the odds for players, which has obviously been one of the issues that's led us into this position a few years ago.
Exactly, yeah. You kind of think back to the January when Albice took over. And we lost 50 million quid at Tosin and Walcott. It's that kind of situation coming up, isn't it? Potentially could be with loan signs, but then even again with loan signs, club might just look at us and think, nah, I'm not doing you a favour, especially with the Premier League clubs. You know, obviously, like the Chelsea, not a way out of our sort of stratosphere of where we are at the minute, but they shouldn't have any issues loaning us players if Lampard comes in. And I've seen people talking about Gilmore, but did Norwich have to let him go? I don't know. It's all up in the air. Mike said, you can't second guess any of this. The positives for me, if it is Lampard, is the fact that he's worked with young players and he seems to do that well. The negatives are, I don't really know much about him as a manager. People say he did well at Derby, but he should have done a lot better with the side he had. He did okay at Chelsea. And the second season, he didn't do so well. He doesn't strike me as a particularly inspiring character, even though he's won the absolute lot with Chelsea. He doesn't strike me as someone who can really get out there and inspire players, especially players who aren't at Chelsea. At Chelsea, you could see maybe he had that because he would have had that aura of an absolute legend at Chelsea. At Everton, he's just some fella who's always scored worldies against us. And that's it. So I think about if Wayne Rooney came in, like people are saying, well, he hasn't got the experience. He's done well at Derby, relatively speaking. I think he kept them up, didn't he, last season, and could keep them up again this season, which would be an absolute miracle if he did. Not much managerial experience, but he would still have that aura at Everton, whereby he was at Everton at the start of his career when he was arguably at his best. He did go on to become one of the world's best players. There's something more about that. And just to go back to the experience thing, I was looking at some stuff the other day, and Howard Kendall only had 2 years at Blackburn before he took over at Everton. So it doesn't always translate that you need top flight experience or X amount of years experience. You look at Steven Gerrard as well, did well at Rangers after no other managerial experience, did he? Apart from Liverpool's under-18s or something like that, doing all right at Villa. It's about finding the manager that fits, and that's something the club have not done consistently since David Moyes. All right, Martinez fitted But he was such a head case as a manager. He was just his own undoing there. So it is about finding a figure that fits. And Frank Lampard doesn't feel like he really fits at Everton, if you know what I mean. It can be that basic.
Yeah.
When Howard Kendall was announced as manager in 81, now he had a few years where it really wasn't going well. But he was, you know, an ex-player, legendary player from the 69-70s season. Went on to have a football career outside of Everton, I think at Birmingham. He was player manager at Blackburn. No one would have known what sort of manager he was turning out to be there. We'd had a desperate decade in the 70s. We'd gone from Harry Catterick to Billy Bingham to Gordon Lee. All totally different managers, all pretty much failed in the 70s. And we took a punt on Howard Kendall. Now, no one would have known what sort of manager he was or would have been, but it did. And he fitted the club because he was all about Everton. And that for me would be the tipping point for Rooney with me. Now, I know a lot of people would disagree with that, and it's fair enough because he is an unknown, but I don't know. There's something about Frank Lampard, he just doesn't fit right at Everton. I don't know what it is.
It might be the fact he's an actual active member of the Tory party, let's be honest. Might be. Like you can say, and I know there'll be people listening and watching this. You'll scream that they don't care about it, and that's fine. You don't have to care about it. I'm not asking you to care about it, but I care about it. I don't really want an active member of the Tory party managing Everton. It clashes with the values that I hold, that my family hold, and I don't like it. And for me, it's just as bad as Benitez for me. Like, I don't really care about the small club thing. I don't really care about the Liverpool connection, but it meant he had less time for a lot of people. It'll mean that Frank Lampard has a lot less time and patience off me, whether it's subconsciously, because I don't hold any similarities with him. I have nothing in common with those ideas. I don't like them. So straight away, it makes me immediately less likely to back and get behind him. Don't worry, if he wins football games, yeah, fine. But you know, when he goes on one of those winless runs, which he will do, you'll probably get less time from me. Whether it's subconsciously, whether it's consciously, I don't know. And that'll be the case for some people, maybe quite a few people. If it doesn't bother you, that's fine. But I'm saying it'll be divisive. It will.
John Holder go ultras will be all over it, by the way, across the park.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course they will.
Oh, I mean, yeah, you know, you can guarantee if we're getting levered at Anfield in a few weeks and he's in charge, then that's what they're going to be singing, isn't it? You know, amongst other things. But it's
what's a story, Frank's a Tory. That will be sung at Anfield. That,
yeah,
it will be.
And it's just the situation we're in now, isn't it? As well, Mike. You know, there is no good candidate, is there?
Yes, there are.
Well, let me rephrase that. There's no good candidate that is being considered by Everton. If you look at the reports, that's where we are.
Well, do you know, the thing for me is
let me just one second. When you've got the setup we are at the moment in terms of the owner and Jurabachan effectively choosing the manager, and when you're in free fall in the Premier League, then the options are never going to be ideal, are they? That's the sort of corner we've backed ourselves into.
Well, of course, the options are never going to be ideal, but you do the best with what you've been given. And Everton are not doing the best with what they're given. They haven't done the best with what they're given for a very, very long time. Whether that's through transfer policy, whether it's through managerial recruitment, they haven't. It's as simple as that. You can look at any of their failed managerial appointments. So there were better candidates out there every single time that have gone on to do and be very successful, even in clubs that have been just as basket casey as Everton. You look at this one now and you have Greg O'Keefe of The Athletic, who obviously a very well-sourced fella, is talking about Lucien Favre having discussions with the Everton hierarchy. Like, I'm sorry, if that man's in the building, you employ him. Like, it's not that difficult. If he's willing to sit down and have a conversation about it, it means he's willing to take the job. He's doing interviews left, right and centre, or being ready to get back into management and a fondness for the Premier League. Like, it's not rocket science. You look at the job the fella's done before, of being in this exact situation before, by the way, and keeping Borussia Mönchengladbach, I think it was, up and actually progressing the side very, very well. It's not a hard choice. Even then, if he doesn't float your boat, Niko Kovac is out of there, recently sacked really unfairly at Monaco. Another very good manager who's done very good work at mid-range clubs like Everton when you look at the likes of Frankfurt. It's just there are managers out there who speak fluent English, speak very good English. It's not that that language barrier is not an issue, and have proven experience in very good leagues of doing things with a club the similar size of Everton in this situation. It's not difficult. Those managers are out there. Whether we sit here and we think about, like, well, would they come to Everton or not? Would they not? Well, fine. If it turns out these fellas would flat out refuse to come, sound. But it doesn't sound like that. From the way that each and every piece has been framed from very different journalists all around the place, it's whether Niko Kovac is in the frame, Lucien Favre is having discussions, those sorts of things. And they're conversations that have been had for years. I think Lucien Favre has been interviewed for the Everton job 3 times now, if he's been interviewed this time, that is. It baffles belief how you can get to this point of not thinking outside of such an incredibly dull box that they live in. I don't understand. And I think, is it just because they have ignored their director of football? Because we all know that the director of football last summer wanted Graham Potter. Marcel Brands wanted Graham Potter to come and manage Everton. I think that would have been a good appointment. I think it would have been a good choice myself. But they ignored him and went with, obviously, the Benitez shout. It's just, it's a very dull, stagnant box that the Everton leadership live in. They don't seem to have any ingenuity or any sort of logical thought with these appointments. And I think this is where the protesting thing comes back to the idea of communication. I'd love to get just the thoughts on, actual proper candid thoughts on the idea of Rafael Benitez as a manager or Vitor Pereira as a manager. I don't care if it doesn't happen. I'd just love to know how you could come to that conclusion when you look at, well, he said it himself. Like, his CV does speak for itself. Yeah, mate, it's shite. It's just terrible.
Maybe they just keep their good PowerPoint presentations, Mike. You know, because these interviews seem to be centered very much around that. Apparently, Rafa knocked it out the park in the summer. You know,
Star wipes everywhere.
Graphics on there, different fonts, you know, just. He was on Canva all morning getting it sorted.
I reckon he managed to put in a couple of transparent background GIFs in and everything. But yeah, it reaches the point where you think that most Evertonians, well, not most, there are some who I've seen who are just as pretty down about this appointment as I am, because I think it's a terrible appointment. And I think the fact that Vitor Pereira has been such a prominent candidate, and it looked like he might actually get the job, has made a few people go, Jesus Christ, well, at least it's not him. I think you've got to kind of step back from it and see that, no, it's actually still a pretty poor appointment when, on the face of it, you look at a manager who didn't do that well at Derby, despite getting Premier League caliber loan players in from Chelsea for very little cost. The idea of working with youth, I think, is a little bit of a misnomer. You look at the likes of Tomori, who he had on loan at Derby and used quite a bit at Chelsea. And then as soon as he had the first chance, he bombed them pretty much out the squad, didn't really use him very much. The only ones he seemed to use were Reece James, who, yeah, well done. You've used the best right-back talent of this generation at right-back. That's amazing work. Well done. At a time when your right-back is aging to the point where he can't run anymore. That sounds quite familiar, actually. But, yeah, well in. He's just spent the season before on loan in the Championship, making Championship players look like conference players. It wasn't the most difficult thing in the world to see that he was a well-beaten right-back, and he's got on to prove it quite easily. And the other one, obviously, is Mason Mount, who he seems to have a very weird affinity for. But it was...
I'll give him a lot of credit for the way he developed him. No, I think...
I won't. Because...
I think that's a little bit unfair. I think he did work really well with him at Derby, and he came back in and he made them sort of the centrepiece of that Chelsea team. And you even watch them now when that lad's not playing. And I don't know, I'm not quite sure what it is, but they don't function anywhere near well enough without him in the side. I don't look at Mount and feel like he was destined to become a top, really important player.
Absolutely. I
feel like he really helped them along with his development to become the player he is now.
And do you know what? I will absolutely go with, he has 100% been a big boost to Mason Mount's career. He has done wonders for him. But I just don't think it's a massive coincidence that in the months after Frank Lampard left and Thomas Tuchel arrived, that we all suddenly, outside of the Chelsea bubble, all suddenly went, what happened to this fella? When did this happen? Because we all did this probably about 3-4 months into Tuchel being at Chelsea. It's like, where has this come from? Because he hasn't always been this good. I don't think there's a coincidence there that properly good coaching from a properly good coach makes a massive difference. And yes, I will fully give you that Frank Lampard will have done well to bring him on. But the idea of this works with youth and develops them to such an elite level, I just think it's a bit of a misnomer. I don't really see it, if I'm honest. And that's before you even get on to the whole Chelsea thing, which was just, what was it? It wasn't that good. It wasn't very good. Like, we look at the idea of, oh yeah, we had a transfer ban. Well, they literally bought Eden Hazard's replacement the January before, who came in on loan that summer, and Christian Pulisic. Like, they've done that. He didn't get no players. Still got players. And then when he had the chance to get players, he got them, had them in ninth position, and not enough is made of this. That team that he left in ninth position won the actual Champions League that year. Like,
he's never on the level of Tuchel, is he? We're never going to get that. Tuchel's another one who's battered his eyelids at us, and we've completely ignored him because this club has just got a history of making terrible, terrible decisions. It doesn't matter who's running it. It's just terrible decisions. Philip Carter replaced Howard Kendall with Colin Harvey. Ridiculous decision. Then we went back to Howard Kendall after Colin Harvey. It's ridiculous. Case in point as well, Jack made this as well. If you're worried about the Tory shouts, we've literally got a stand named after a massive Tory.
Yeah.
Which is a pain in the arse.
It is. And we don't like it.
I know.
But so that's the point, is, yeah, like, we can't...
Convince me now. Get him out.
Exactly. See, it's like, we can't stop these things, but we don't like it. Like, yeah. It's not an argument of me going, like, well, he shouldn't be Everton manager because he's a Tory. It's like, for me, I wouldn't have him there because I don't like it and I don't agree with the values of it. But it's not because he's a Tory. It's because he's so vociferously, blatantly Tory. Like, yeah, we're under no illusions that... A lot of footballers will vote Tory because it suits their affluent nature. It suits them. Like, it does. That's the way it is. But to be so like, oh yeah, I hold Tory values. I was asked to stand as a member of parliament for the Conservative. Get out. I don't want that. And you know, I don't like that. It's going to have no bearing on whether he gets appointed as Everton manager. And that's fine, because you know what? Yeah, maybe he'll win some games and people will be happy. But when he does go on that winless run, people will turn. And that will be one of the things that people turn on.
I'm with you on that now.
Yeah.
Get him gone.
Yeah.
That's Pereira then.
But it all goes back to the idea, like, if people are listening to that and they are screaming just into the void at me, I'm not asking you to care. I'm not saying that you should care about this. If you don't, fair dues to you. It's not my problem. It's just, I do. That's it.
There we go. Didn't even speak about style of football any of that
but what is it? What is this? Like, can you tell me what his style of football is?
This is what I said before. I have no idea how he plays, what sort of a manager it is. Nothing.
You look at someone like Mick Greenall, obviously is a lot better at looking at the actual ins and outs and tactics of football than we are, because we just scream at players and go and have drinks, whereas he sits and watch the Bundesliga at like 2 o'clock in the morning on a Tuesday night. And he retweeted an assessment of Lampard's time at Derby and as a reason not for Chelsea to employ him. And it was, looking at it, it was like, the obviously some people are going to hate it, but the XG was so low compared to what they actually had. It was, you can look at it and go, well, you can pinpoint the exact moments that Harry Wilson or Mason Mount score a wonder goal to dig them out and get a result, as opposed to like good play, progressive play, actually scoring goals with a coherent plan. It's kind of what Everton have now. It's just... A player will turn up, whether it's Damari Gray or whether it's Richarlison, a player will turn up for a game and get points single-handedly. It's kind of what we have now. It's what we're trying to move away from. We're trying to get towards having a coherent strategy of how to score goals, because we've lost it again. We had it for about 3 months under Ancelotti, where we're like, it's an Everton goal there. Yeah, okay. We've lost it again. I couldn't tell you what an Everton goal looks like. And that is the absolute panic station setting that we have. I think we talk about it every time there is a calamity, Matt, is that you know it's bad because it always gets back to that stage where we sit down and go, well, I can't tell you what an Everton passage of play looks like anymore, let alone a goal. There is nothing that I actually know as to be that Everton. And I don't see Lampard having that defined style or progressive play that's going to go, oh yeah, he can create that, because he's not really managed it anywhere. So, nah.
Just on that thread you mentioned, I don't want to sound like I'm a Lampard acolyte here or anything, because I'm not. But I think it was David Hughes who retweeted saying, in fairness, the first season he had at Chelsea, the XG he had on that, I think they finished fourth or third that season. I think in the case that they should have been really close to Liverpool, they would have run away winners of the Premier League that season. So we sort of had XG was against them at Derby and they outperformed it. They sort of underperformed it the year after. So, I mean, that just makes you even more, you know, clueless about what a style of play is, doesn't it? I mean, who knows? But listen, like Mike said, by the time this goes out, it could be Mark Hughes.
It'll be Mark Hughes, everyone.
Which will be even worse. Would you have Mark Hughes or Lampard?
Burn it down.
Again, we do not condone arson here on the Blue Room.
No arson about.
No, hey, there we go. That's the title. That's the title. But we'll leave it there. Cheers to Mike. Cheers to Les. Let us know your thoughts on anything this week. Have you ever phoned up someone and regretted it straight away?
Loads of times. Oh, yeah.
There's a mailbag question.
No, I can't.
Yeah,
I can't.
Delve into that a little, buddy. Have you ever phoned someone up and regretted it? Yeah. Have you ever drawn a moustache and glasses on someone anywhere?
Yeah. Like in real life, yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever spoken to someone in real life? Like,
yeah.
Right, last night.
They were very asleep and, yeah.
Oh, did you use permanent marker?
Yeah.
Oh, heavy. Yeah.
I didn't do the drawing. I was just an accomplice. I found a marker.
Did you, like, just sort of hold the person down or?
No, they were very drunk and asleep.
Fair enough. Right. Let us know the answer to all those things. And, of course, what you think about Frank Lampard potentially being Everton manager, protests, and anything else. So, yeah, been an eventful one as ever. Cheers to Mike. Cheers to Les. That has been your weekly show. We will speak to you again very soon here on the Blue Room.
Dear gas prices, go take a hike. Toyota is the number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. The Toyota hybrid lineup brings efficiency with power and savings with style. Not to mention top tech to help keep you connected. Plush premium interiors and the most advanced Toyota safety features. So, now you know who you're talking to. Toyota. The number one retail brand for electrified vehicles for 22 years. With a hybrid or electric vehicle built for every driver. Seriously, dear gas prices? Do you really think you could stand in our way? Think again. Toyota hybrids. Find yours at Toyota.com. Toyota. Let's go places.
Based on manufacturer estimates, CY 2000 through 2021 sales.
Podcast Network.